This is 5x5, a podcast from the Frontier Master Executive Council. 5x5, the podcast for the ALPA pilots of Frontier Airlines. We hear you loud and clear.
Welcome back to another episode of 5x5. I'm your host, Jason DeVerney. We're going to be learning about how to get the most out of your PBS bid in this episode. Joining me today is PBS Chair Matt Pease and PBS Committee Member Dave Koons. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
I think I'll start with Matt since he's the chairman of the committee. What does the PBS committee do? Can you help us visualize how you support the pilot group on a monthly basis?
So the PBS committee does quite a few things, actually. Our primary purpose is to produce the actual PBS bid runs and the monthly awards. But throughout the whole month, we kind of have something going on all the time. The month begins with answering PBS bidding help darts. So the first 5 days or so of the month, we're available to help anybody with their PBS bid through the DART system. After the bidding is closed, we take a few days to do the actual PBS bid runs, which takes a couple of days for each captain and first officer. And then after the awards come out, we are around to help people understand their awards and to process any miss awards that may have occurred. Beyond that, we're available throughout the rest of the month to help with the recurrent training bid and vacation adjustment period and things like that. But generally, we're just around to help with people with their bids and to do the actual bid runs themselves.
So when you say that you do the PBS runs, what does that look like? What's your involvement from the ALPA side in the processing and what we see on our end?
The way it works functionally is the company kind of configures the entire system each month. So they set everything up as far as your vacations and known absences and things like that. It all takes place online. And for each one of the domiciles, we have to do as many bid runs as it takes to get what the contract calls a successful bid run. So we sit there and we make little tweaks as far as like open time and things like that that affect the overall solution. So we sit there for hours and hours and hours and tweak the bid runs until they're as good as we think they can get. And then once that's done, we meet with the company again. They review them to make sure that they're completely compliant, and then we publish them.
When I think of quality of life, I think about trip commutability, fatigue mitigation, connection times in between legs, max number of legs in a day. Do we have input in this when we look at line and bid construction? How does ALPA interact with the pairing construction, if at all? And how does that compare to our peers?
So that is the scheduling committee's responsibility, is they actually work with the company both on pairing review, and they will look at those particular pairings and give input to the company on what they see might be a better option. But as far as the PBS committee, we do not have any interaction with the pairing build. Those pairings come to us completed and built, and then we run that system just as Chairman P said, and build the lines for the pilots with the pairings that were built by the company.
Now, you say that you answer a lot of darts leading up to this whole process. Can you help the listeners understand what the difference is between a dart that should be submitted to PBS, you two, or a dart that should go to scheduling?
So the easiest way to differentiate between those two is whether you're in NavBlue or not. That's kind of the big one. So if you're doing something to do with NavBlue, whether it's the monthly bid or recurrent training bid or something along those lines, that's absolutely a PBS committee type function. We generally answer the darts that have to do with the vacation adjustment period. But if you have a day-to-day scheduling issue, like a problem with a reserve assignment or something like that, that's more the scheduling committee's job.
When it comes to choosing a dart, you've got different issue types that you can choose dealing with PBS. But sometimes people choose scheduling, or they won't choose the proper, in your committee, the proper issue type related to what they're seeing. Perhaps it's fatigue related or scheduling committee related. How important is it that they choose as specifically as possible the correct issue that they're dealing with?
So it's helpful to pick the correct issue type right away because it means it goes to the correct subject matter expert. So if you throw a dart to PBS bidding help, it only goes to me and Dave and the other PBS committee members. If you throw a dart to the wrong committee, it could take some time before one of the committee members is able to notice that and reassign it to us. So if you select the wrong issue type in the DART system, it may take a lot longer to get a response than if you just select bidding help right away.
Okay. And Dave, can you kind of explain what PBS is, how it differs from our old system of line bidding, and maybe some pros and cons that come along with that?
Yeah, the old system live bidding is the scheduling committee would produce the lines, and then a pilot would have the opportunity to bid specific lines. And those lines obviously couldn't be amended until the daily open time system opened. Now at the PBS system, we have the opportunity through the NAP Blue system to go ahead and select the preferences that we would like right from the get-go. And as a pilot, you can choose specific days off, other type of specificity of trips that you would like. Whereas in line bidding, we would try to build them with a regular cadence. So for example, you would often have a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday work, then a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday off. With PBS, you have the opportunity to have 1 week with that Wednesday, Monday through Wednesday at work. The following week could be a completely different set of days on and off. So with that opportunity, the pilots have a lot more flexibility in their schedule on how they bid that.
Now, in preparation for this episode, I've had a lot of conversations with friends that are other carriers, and I spent a considerable amount of time listening to the PBS specific podcasts that our peers at Alaska and Delta and other carriers have put out. And one of the things that I found really interesting through those conversations was over at Delta, they use NAVBLUE as well. And the pilots over there are actually able to see everyone's line award like we do on the ELP page. But a pilot told me that he can actually access the reasons report as well, the document that shows what was approved, what wasn't, based on the commands put into the actual NAVBLUE bid. So they can see that for the other pilots, which I confirmed by listening to Delta's podcast on the topic. And I was wondering, do we have access to that level of transparency? It really seems helpful, as they said in Engage on their podcast, that you can look 10 pilots up, 10 pilots down, and you can figure out some techniques that might work for you.
Yeah, we certainly do have access to that information on the administrative side. And it's not really, it wouldn't be a technical challenge for us to publish those. It just hasn't been something that that we've decided to do. We're certainly open to it. So if people are interested in that, I'd recommend that they reach out to their rep and express that interest. And then it's certainly something that we could do in the future if that was the direction that the pilot group wanted to go.
And I imagine that'd be something to reach out to your reps too if you don't want that, right? If you have privacy concerns or something, to reach out to your reps and tell them, hey, don't switch that on. We don't want that.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
There's days in the years like Christmas when a ton of pilots want the days off and coverage simply won't allow it. We see big unstacking movements. How does unstacking work and who does it affect?
So unstacking, or coverage awards, as NAVBLUE calls them, is just the process of awarding excess flying in any given calendar day. So practically what happens is the system tries to complete everybody's schedules without any unstacking. And then as we're doing the bid runs, we see that there's way too many open trips on a specific calendar day. And so we basically force the system to put that flying onto the schedules of junior pilots. So the system goes back through and tries again, and it essentially starts over and awards these unstacking or coverage trips first, and then the rest of your schedule around it. So in a month like Christmas, it means that the most junior 50% of line holders could end up working a pairing on or around Christmas, contrary to their preferences potentially. So it's just the system forcing basically undesired flying onto people's calendars.
Now, is there ways that if they structured their PBS bid differently to where they say, hey, I'm open to ending a trip at 10 a.m. on Christmas or starting a trip at 8 p.m. on Christmas, if they were to put like time stops in there, would that help them better have their preferences honored in their bid? If they considered, hey, yeah, I'm a pretty junior guy and I'm probably going to have to work that day, let's just make it work better to my arrangements.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way that the unstacking is set up in NAVBLUE, if it determines at your seniority that you must work December 25th, you just need to work December 25th at all. It doesn't matter how many hours you work on that day or what time of day you work. You just need a pairing that touches that calendar day. So yeah, people do a regularly bid like that, and we encourage it. So if you can basically prefer off December 25th, and then right below that, you can preference pairings that operate on Christmas, but like you said, maybe get done early in the morning or leave late at night or something along those lines. And the system will look for those types of pairings if it has to deny your preference for that holiday off. So yeah, absolutely. That's a really good bidding strategy.
Well, let's stay on that line for a little bit here. So with bidding strategies, what are some of the biggest mistakes you see month in, month out that the pilots are doing?
The biggest mistakes that we see consistently is the incorrect usage of what's called else start next bid group or clear schedule and start next bid group. Those are the two preferences that really cause people trouble. They use them incorrectly and can potentially end up on reserve because of it, or end up with a line with no preferences at all. So that does happen occasionally. So if you are using those two preferences, just if you don't understand how to use them, please reach out to us via the Dart system, or we're happy to help you. there are valid reasons to use them, but there are a lot of not great reasons to use them too.
Yeah, Dave, I know that when you and I were flying together and we were talking about the idea of having this episode, that was a main one that you brought up. Can you think of any other mistakes that you see pilots making on a regular basis or ways that they can improve their quality of life by utilizing PBS?
Actually, I think that's what Matt said is the two biggest mistakes that we see. And quite frankly, is trying to outsmart the system. And to Matt's point, if you don't understand the logic of the system, please reach out to us via the DART system. And we will help you look through your bid and make sure the logic makes sense.
Yeah, just like we talked about in the show previously, we had the idea of Christmas, right? You're junior, you're going to have to work it. Might as well build a preference around it that, or maybe multiple preferences around it, that have you being home at least for a partial part of that day. When we have avoid red eyes or avoid weekend flying, if that's even a thing, I build my bids completely different. When we see people, I guess, prefer off weekends, that'd be a code, right? We see that it's going to try to block off from midnight until midnight, Saturday and Sunday, right? So again, if you're junior and you don't mind working maybe Friday night into Saturday morning or Saturday evening into Monday morning, thinking through these trips and looking through the actual bid packet and going, hey, you know what? That one trip there that gets back a little bit later, I wouldn't mind doing that one. I can still live my life in the way that I think is comfortable. It's worth taking the time to consider those options when they're building their bid preference, right?
It absolutely is. And I think one thing that we tell people typically is to have what we call or term a backstop. So you can prefer weekends off. And just like what Matt said, you can prefer Christmas off. It's the same logic involved. But beyond that, you may want to say, I don't think I can hold the entire weekend off. Oftentimes we tell people, is Sunday more important than Saturday? You can bid your Sundays off after that. Or to your point, Jason, you can bid a specific time in which to duty on and duty off on that weekend.
Okay.
And just real quick, this is kind of off topic a touch, but Matt, I think we should probably talk about the red eye situation, the if not versus avoid red eyes.
Okay, sure. So another thing we see fairly frequently is pilots using really strong avoid pairing statements. So a good example is avoid pairings if any leg is red eye. We see people use that, and it's a very tempting bid preference to use because it absolutely captures what most people want, which is to not fly red eyes. The issue is the way that NAVBLUE handles a statement like that. So if you tell the system that you don't want any red eyes at all, it will try. But if you're not senior enough to hold that, it'll end up just denying that preference entirely, and then it starts over again. So now all of your bid lines can now potentially match red eye pairings. You can end up with a lot of red eyes, even if you bid to avoid red eyes because your seniority can't hold that. We don't recommend people use really strong avoid statements unless they're certain they're senior enough to hold that. We recommend instead people try to deliberately preference the flying that they want with award statements. And the example of that is if you wanted to fly 4 days with no red eyes, your bid line, instead of just saying award pairings if pairing length equals 4 days, it would say award pairings if pairing length equals 4 days, if not any leg is red eye. And then the system will consider non-red eye 4 days only. So you can end up with fewer red eyes by bidding if not red eyes, as opposed to the more generic avoid pairings if any leg is red eye.
We've all been junior at carriers, right? Explain the power of waving.
So yeah, the way that we have our NAVBLUE system configured is we've got a lot of rules built into it. And unfortunately, sometimes the rules make it difficult for it to complete the last few lines in any domicile. So if you're junior or right on the bubble of holding a line, it can be very beneficial to use wave bid preferences. And this is something we see almost every month. We get darts after the awards come out and people say, why didn't I get a line? The person below me did. And the answer is almost always because they waived something. So generally, the most junior line goes to somebody who waived one or more things in their bid to allow the system to try additional combinations of pairings.
And what options do we have for waiving?
We have three for line holders and one for reserve. We've got, for line holders, we have 1 day off and seven, minimum days off, and no same day pairings. And minimum days off is a point of confusion as well. It's not your overall days off for the month, and it's not days off between pairings. It's only days off between your blocks of work. So that could be a single pairing or it could be multiple pairings pushed together. But once you get to days off, NAVBLUE needs to award three. You can waive that down to two or down to one.
The 5x5 podcast wants to hear from you. Throw us a dart at dart.alpa.org or via our app and let us know what we're doing well where we need improvement, and what you want to hear in upcoming episodes. We hear you loud and clear.
Let's run through a couple terms that I find confusing. I don't understand. I'm sure other people are in the same boat as me. What is denial mode?
Denial mode is when the system isn't able to fully honor all of your what we call negative bid preferences. And that means your avoid pairings, prefer off, and set condition bid lines. So if the system can't fully honor all of those, it'll end up entering denial mode, which means it'll either completely deny or partially honor one of your negative preferences. And denial mode is actually very, very useful in NavBlue. If you've set your bid up correctly, denial mode is going to very methodically determine what your seniority can and cannot hold. So you occasionally hear people talk about top to bottom and left to right. Top to bottom is really kind of the heart of denial mode, and the ranking of your negative preferences is very, very important. Whatever's at the top of your bid gets the highest priority.
Okay. Avoid, set condition. If not, we kind of talked a little bit about this, but can you expand on those three terms?
Yeah. So of the negative bid preferences, there's avoid pairings, which is a bid line just saying you don't want a specific pairing attribute, whether that's red eyes or avoid pairings if any landing in Cancun or whatever it may be. You're avoiding any pairing that matches a specific criteria. Prefer off is you're preferring off either dates, as in a date range, a date list, day of the week, whatever it may be. You're preferring off something to do with a day. And then there's set condition bids, which can be anything from a bid for the minimum or maximum credit window to a pattern of days on and off. So any of those can be denied, like we talked about denial mode, but we call those all negative bid preferences.
How are credit windows structured? They change from month to month, correct?
Yep. The credit windows are calculated based on the average line value that the company picks. So we have three credit windows, the minimum, normal, and maximum, and they shift up and down a little bit each month based on the average line value. I can get into the specific numbers if you want, but
yeah. How does that affect the pilot's quality of life, say month to month? What kind of things should they think about with a lower credit window as opposed to a higher credit window? What kind of mistakes do you see with people utilizing those?
So there's not too many mistakes you can make by bidding the minimum or maximum credit window. By default, you're in the normal unless you deliberately preference either of the other two windows. You insert it as a set condition bid. So entrance to the minimum and maximum credit windows is based on seniority. So we occasionally have to restrict the number of bidders into either window, depending on how the runs are going each month.
This is a tough one. So with the min, normal, and max credit window, there are occasions where we have to restrict the number of pilots that we award into that system. We are into that window. What we try to do, or what we have to do, is we have to come within a certain amount of the ALV that the company provides. So if we have 80% of our pilots bid the maximal window, there's no way that we can reach that ALV mathematically. So oftentimes we have to restrict that. So that the award of the min or the max is based on seniority. If you're not able to hold, if for example, if you bid the max window, if you're not able to hold that, you'll return back to the normal window and be awarded a line from that normal window.
So some people, when they first join Frontier and they've never seen PBS before, they've never used NavBlue before, or they've never used these credit windows, maybe they're not understanding why they're not able, as a line holder should hold it, not able to get a 91-hour line. Why are they not able to get a low credit line, right? And it's because they're stuck in that middle buffer zone, right?
Yeah, and the issue with the credit windows is I could go on for hours about it, because every time I say something, there's a little asterisk on every sentence because there's an exception to everything we've said. It can be a little challenging to discuss the credit windows.
How does someone transition from one bid group to another, and what does that even mean?
Good question. So, and it's a complicated answer, but basically, in order to go from two bid groups of the same type, you have to give the system an instruction to do that. So if you have two pairing bid groups in a row, the only way you can go from one to the other is through either a clear schedule and start next bid group instruction or an else start next bid group instruction. You don't need that if you're going from pairing to reduce lower limit, or from pairing to reserve, or from reduce lower limit to reserve. Basically, two dissimilar bid groups, you don't require an instruction. The system will just go to the next one when it can't complete your schedule. But if you're building multiple pairing bid groups, like I said before, you have to have an else start next or clear schedule and start next. An else start next bid group instruction is attached to a specific bid line, like a prefer off, avoid pairings, or set condition bid line. And a clear schedule is different. It goes at the bottom of your bid group. And it's essentially saying if the system reaches that point of your bid, it hasn't gone the way you wanted it to, and you'd like to go to the next bid group instead. We see that strategy a lot with senior pilots who bid batches of specific pairings. So they want, say, like these six pairings. If this doesn't work, they want to start over again in a different bid group with a different strategy. I'll start next. We see frequently people jump between pairing bid groups with different bidding strategies, or they'll go from pairings to reserve deliberately based on an I'll start next too if they're trying to get specific days off. So some pilot may say, I want this one day of the month off. If I can't have it as a line holder, I'd rather band reserve. You could do that with an I'll start next too.
Now, these sound like the commands that you're telling us to be careful with and to avoid, right? This is where we see the most mistakes in this process, according to what they mentioned earlier in the show. So there are training videos on the ELPA website that I would imagine Matt and Dave want you to go watch. And then what you still don't understand, probably reach out to them for further clarification. Does that sound right?
Yeah. We certainly encourage people to watch the training videos. And then if you are using LStart Next or Clear Schedule and Start Next for the first time or the second time or whatever, and you have a question about it or you want to confirm that it's doing what you want it to do, just throw us a dart, particularly when the bidding is open and we can take a look at your bid and make sure it's going to do what you want it to do.
You know, I just recently upgraded to captain, so everything I learned about bidding for lines has gone out the window and I'm playing the reserve game. Hopefully in a few months, a few bidding cycles, I should be able to start taking advantage of reduced lower limits. Can you explain what that is, how that will show up on your line award and things to consider when putting in for it?
Yeah. So reduced lower limit lines are hybrid lines and different companies call them different things. You may hear them like composite lines or build up lines, things like that. But we call them reduced lower limit lines. The way that it works functionally is it'll say pairing bid group reduced lower limit. You put that between your normal pairing bid groups for a regular line and above your reserve bid group. And if they're available that month, then the system will award you some amount of pairing credit from NavBlue, typically 40, 50, or 60 hours or so. And then once those pairings are on your calendar, crew planning will manually add reserve days at a pay credit of 4 hours a day until you hit monthly guarantee or until you reach 12 days off. So you end up with a partial line of pairings and a partial line of reserve. A lot of people like them because it gives them the flexibility of a line holder when they can't really hold a line. The neat thing about the reserve days is that you can drop them without any coverage checks until the 14th. All you have to do is email crew scheduling and they can just take the reserve days off. You still have to finish the month with 60 or 70 hours, depending on what month it is, but you can drop those reserve days.
Yeah. And as far as drops go, do you see, and maybe this is more of a scheduling question, but do you see reserve day drops get awarded?
Well, the reduced lower limit reserve days, they can't really fight you on those. That's just a contractual right that you have, is to drop those days.
What's the importance of having a default bid? And when do they go away? Because they can just disappear, right?
Default bids are great for two reasons. The first is if you forget to bid, at least you'll have a bid in place. Your default bid will be used if you don't have anything in that current bid tab. The second reason that I encourage people to use them for is as a bidding template. So once people establish a bid that they like and they're comfortable with and they want to keep using, I recommend people use it as a template and then copy it over into the current bid tab each month and then make just the one-time modifications to it. Default bids do get removed if you switch positions in any way. So if you go to another domicile or if you upgrade, your default bid gets removed. You can recover it. There's actually a method in the PBS handbook on the ALPA site for that. It's fairly simple. You just have to get it from a previous bid period, but you can still recover your default bid if you change bases. But it will get removed. We have seen it in the past where people switched bases, didn't realize that, and then got awarded a schedule with no preferences.
Yeah, Dave kind of blew my mind when we were flying together a few months ago. He told me that you can actually sync more than two bid periods. Every time we open up NavBlue, you have the pop-up that says syncing, right? Well, say I just got done with upgrade, right? So I didn't bid for 2 months. And when I went to rebuild my bid or think about my bid, because even though I can only hold reserve, I still bid for a line. I wanted to bring those preferences over from previous months, and I was able to sync back farther, grab my first officer bids with the longer preference stack, I guess, of coding, and copy that into my captain bid, right? In the off chance that enough people above me want reserve or something crazy happens, that I've got some structure in there for that. And that was incredibly useful for me to be able to just grab it, copy, paste, and sync. How far back can we sync? And how do people actually do that?
So it's funny, I'll go off on a tangent here slightly, but the syncing of the bid periods is something that still annoys me to this day because I think we made a slight mistake when we set up the configuration in NavBlue. You've mentioned other airlines, they also have NavBlue. The syncing of bid periods is something that you can configure when you first set up NavBlue. And they gave us choices. And the choice that we made was to have the synchronization happen automatically in only the previous two bid periods. And the reason for that is because it loads faster that way if you only sync two. Some carriers have it set up where it asks you every single time you log in, how many bid periods do you want to sync? I kind of wish we went with that option just so that people would be more familiar with the syncing process. But either way, once you get into NavBlue, there's a circle with two arrows all the way at the top right. If you click on that, you can select additional bid periods. I'm not sure if there's a limit to how far back it goes. Dave may know the answer to that, but you can go back really far. I know people regularly, they'll pull up like last year's Thanksgiving bid or something like that as a reference, and they'll pull that up. So at least a year, I'm not sure if there's a limit at all.
I'm not aware of a limit either. I just pulled up a year ago on my NavBlue, but that's as far as I can see. So I don't know if there's, it doesn't appear that you can go back more than a year.
When it comes to reserve, I'm currently a reserve pilot again, so this is real important to me. Can you explain the sequence of awarding the various reserve windows, long call, short call, and then days off? How does this need to be thought about when you're putting your bid in place? And are we limited by NavBlue's ability to incorporate long call and short call together? Or is that just something that we agreed on with management?
The way that NavBlue awards reserve days on and off and reserve call types is kind of backwards compared to line holders. So even though your reserve call type bids are placed at the top of your bid group in NavBlue, it actually processes your days off first. And that's purely in seniority order. We have to balance the reserve coverage throughout the month. So some junior pilots will be forced to work some days, but it's a seniority process. When it comes time to assign reserve call types, there's some limitations. Well, first, it processes in seniority order, but ultimately has to balance the distribution of the call types throughout the month. So we're provided a list of the A, C, and D reserve that the company's expecting. So the first limitation is that there can't be too many of any one short call type. And within each of the short call types, it has to be reasonably distributed throughout the month. So not everybody on A reserve, for example, can have the same exact days off, because then there would be giant holes in the reserve coverage throughout the month. So although it's processed in seniority order, you might see somebody junior D with the call type that you wanted, and it's because they've got a different set of days on and off. Now, the exception to that logic is long call reserve. That's a pure seniority process. So if there are, say, five long call slots available in your domicile, all five can go to people with the same exact days off, because the system doesn't consider the balance of the coverage, just a limitation of NavBlue. So pure seniority for long call. But within each short call type, seniority is considered, but not guaranteed.
And on the reserve topic, there's got to be some things that frustrate you guys. What kind of mistakes do you see pilots making in the reserve bid?
Yeah, one of the mistakes we see frequently is people using multiple reserve bid groups, but only including one call type in each bid group. And what happens is the system will end up awarding them a call type that they didn't bid for within a bid group that only contained a single reserve call type bid. So what we recommend people do is to use only one reserve bid group if possible and include all of the available call types. So we offer A, C, and D reserve currently in NavBlue. We recommend that you bid for all three in every reserve bid group and rank them in order. That way, the system knows what to give you if your first preference call type isn't available. Occasionally, we see people attempting multiple reserve bid groups with one call type in each, and occasionally they get a call type they didn't bid for because the system awarded from a bid group that only had one bid in it.
So it sounds like if you want to play that game and you want to narrow down your reserve functionality as acute as possible, set up a time to talk to them through the Dart system to have them help you structure your reserve bid groups appropriately.
Yeah, because NavBlue processes your days off before it processes the call types, there's no way to flip that over on NavBlue. You can't get away with trying to preference a call type over your days off. So like I used to bid C reserve all the time, and I would have taken any set of days off just to get C reserve. Well, you can't bid like that in NavBlue. There's no way to do it. The best you can do is just include all of the reserve call types in one bid group and bid for your days off and let the chips fall as they may, because you can't preference that call type over your days off. You can't sacrifice your days off to get the call type you want. There's no way to bid like that. But we are available to help you with the reserve bid. And ask yourself the question, if you're including multiple reserve bid groups, just ask yourself why you have multiple bid groups. And if you don't understand the exact reason you have more than one, just throw us a Dart, ask us for help. We're around for that.
In FDO lines, those are more of a scheduling committee type process and less PBS, correct?
Yeah, we can talk about them. Depends what you want to talk about them. Well, I can just say that fixed staff reserve lines are awarded in FLICA prior to the NavBlue process. So if you're awarded an FDO line, you're not eligible to bid in NavBlue. You are eligible for recurrent training bidding, but just not pairings or reserve from NavBlue. Yeah.
And another great reason to subscribe to TextCaster, right? So you can be notified of when those windows open and you don't miss them. I know there's a drip campaign that's going on. All of our new hire pilots have been getting this great sequence of emails coming out to really spool them up. They're timed. It's really to try to get everybody up to speed by the time they hit the line and then through their first year. But say you're a pilot that thinks they need to improve on their knowledge of PBS, or even one of these brand new pilots coming up to the ranks, where do they go and what resources do they have to help them better understand the bidding process beyond this podcast? Where can they find the PBS bidding guide? And do you keep that up to date? Who's maintaining it? What tools are there?
So there are lots of resources available to new hires that want to learn the system. The first is the PBS resources page on the MEC website, so frontier.alpa.org. And then you can find us under MEC committees. We have a PBS handbook, training videos, as well as some other links to NatBlue and stuff in there. We are available for one-on-one bidding help through the DART system. So if you're a new hire and you want help, feel free to throw us a DART. It's helpful if you do that around when the bidding is open, because then we're generally available for that. But we also host webinars each month for new hire pilots. They'll get an email invitation directly from me for those. And if you want to learn even more about the system, there are really good help files in NavBlue. At the top right, there's a question mark icon. That's updated and maintained by NavBlue, and there's a lot of really useful information in there. You can kind of get lost in it too, though.
Did you know you can subscribe to 5x5 and be notified immediately upon publication? Most of our recent downloads have been coming from browsers like Safari or Chrome. We made it simple to subscribe. Go to the show notes and click the subscribe link. It will take you to a list of podcast apps. Click your favorite. Your app will open up to this podcast. Click subscribe and never miss an episode.
Can you guys explain pattern bidding and how that might work for you? Some common mistakes you see? Because I would imagine if you're doing, say, a pattern bid of 3-on-3-off, eventually it's not going to be able to give you what you want, especially if you're a reserve pilot, and it's going to up something at the end of the month or somewhere, right? What's something pilots need to think of when they're doing a pattern bid to make sure that it's actually executed properly within the application?
Yeah, so pattern bids are really interesting. They're available to both pairing and reserve bid groups. So whether you're a line holder or reserve, you can bid for a pattern. And when you bid for a pattern, it's entered as a set condition bid line. And you define the minimum number of days on, the maximum number of days on, and the minimum number of days off. So when you bid for a pattern as a line holder, and you put it, if you put in something, say, like between 4 and 6 days on with 3 days off, the system will remember that as it reads your award pairings bid lines. And when it finds the first pairing, it's going to say, okay, this either satisfies the pattern or it doesn't. If it doesn't satisfy the pattern, it'll read bid lines below. It'll keep going down your bid until it finds something to fill in the pattern. So if you bid for a pattern of between 4 and 6 on, and your first preference results in a 3-day pairing, it can't stop there. It has to find something else. So it'll go down until it finds at least a 1-day pairing or something longer to satisfy your pattern. The issues we see with pattern bidding is when you bid for a pattern that you can't have, if you're too restrictive with it. So if you bid for something like, if you want between 5 and 6 on, but there's not enough pairings available at your seniority to support that, what can happen is the system will initially try to complete your line with the pattern in place and then realize it's not possible. It'll enter denial mode and it'll deny the pattern entirely. So that's one issue we see with pattern bidding, is you've got to be realistic with them. So the more vague you're willing to be with them, like say between 3 and 6 on or something like that, the more likely you're going to be successful with it. Within reserve bid groups, the biggest issue we see with patterns is people bidding for things that aren't mathematically possible. For reserve, we occasionally see people trying to bid for large blocks of reserve days on, like in a 30-day bid month, you only get 18 reserve days. So some people try to bid a pattern of between 6 and 6 on just to get their reserve blocks in nice big chunks. But that's not possible in a 31-day month, so because you get 19 reserve days. So we'll see people bid for patterns that aren't mathematically possible, and the system just has to deny them.
Let's take a little bit of a pivot here. So I know you guys don't really have any interaction. It's more of a scheduling function of the vacation award, right? So we'll have our multiple cycles of vacation awards that happen whenever, October, whatever it might be. Once those are on our schedule, we can move them around. There's vacation trading. There's things like that. Again, not you. When PBS comes into play, it's on the 20th, the month before, 2 months before, and I'll have you clarify that, to where you can get in, you can start making modifications. Can you walk us through the steps the dates, the tools available to make modifications to an award of vacation so that pilots understand how to get the most out of their vacation award, the fact that they can stretch it, what those stretch days mean as far as pay goes, and all these tools they have to maintain the highest quality of life they can with their vacation.
Yeah. So we have what's called a vacation adjustment period, and that happens about 2 months prior to the vacation month. So if you were talking about July vacations, for example, that would be happening in May. So on May 20th, you can go in and make modifications to your July vacation. You've got lots of options within the vacation adjustment period. You can slide your vacation forward or backwards 3 days. You can add what's called vacation stretch days, whether paid or unpaid, or you can adjust the vacation credit value itself. The final option is you can sell back your vacation to the company. So I can break down each one of those. So the vacation slide, you can go forward or backwards 3 days as long as your vacation stays in the bid period. That's not based on coverage or company discretion or anything. That's just a guarantee. You can just do that. And all of these processes take place in the ELP Crew Pay app on your iPad. You can add vacation stretch days. You get two of them for every 7 days of vacation. If you have fewer than 7 days, you can't use stretch days at all. If you take the vacation stretch days as paid, you'll end up starting the monthly bid period with additional credit, but you'll be drawing that credit from your vacation bank. It reduces the hours, not the days that you've accrued. If you take them unpaid, they just come from nowhere. They don't affect the total vacation accrual or anything. If you choose to sell your vacation, the company removes the vacation from your calendar, and then you're awarded a normal schedule and now blue with no vacation, and then your vacation credit value is placed back on top of your line value at 5 hours a day, unless you have fewer than that in your vacation bank. As far as how each of those things affects your award, it kind of depends. So if you're a line holder, or you're expecting to be a line holder, and you increase your vacation credit value, or you add paid vacation stretch days, you should reasonably expect to be awarded less flying in that month. If you're a reserve pilot, the vacation credit value doesn't really affect the number of reserve days you get at all. You can add vacation stretch days that will affect the number of prorated days off you get, but the credit value doesn't really play into reserve at all.
So you're a reserve pilot. You want to add a few days. There's a chart in our CBA that you can go to, right, to see how that would affect the number of reserve days they would place on your schedule as a reserve pilot, correct?
Yeah, correct. So if you have vacation if you're on reserve and you have vacation, the total days off you receive is based on the proration table in Section 25 of the CBA. So by having either more vacation days or vacation stretch days, you can potentially net additional total days that aren't reserve days in your bid month, if that makes any sense at all.
Yeah, so you're allowing yourself to have more days off while preventing potentially having days off touching your vacation. So say you get your award of vacation, you just want to add a few days towards the end of it, or even maybe one day before, so that you can ensure that you're home in a delay into a day off type situation. You're home to catch that flight wherever you want to go, right? You can add a little bit of insurance to that vacation that you have, and right from the get go, that you're guaranteed that unpaid or paid vacation stretch day, right?
Yeah. So you kind of hit the original intent of the vacation stretch days was to prevent NAVBLUE from awarding things really close to your vacation. That was one of our fears, was that you would have a week of vacation and then you would finish a trip at 11:59 p.m. the day before your vacation. So vacation stretch days kind of came into existence, and you can block calendar days in your schedule. And yeah, that's exactly what the point of them is to prevent the system from encroaching too close to your vacation.
Why would you want to reduce the vacation credit?
For a couple of reasons. One that I mentioned before is that in a reserve month, the vacation credit value doesn't play into your total days off at all. So adjusting your credit value makes no difference. That credit just stays in your bank. That'll get paid out in the following January. If you're a line holder, there's some strategy involved. So if you have multiple weeks of vacation and you choose to lower the vacation credit value earlier in the year for some of your vacation, you're essentially leaving excess credit in your bank so that you can afford to pay for vacation stretch days or to increase the vacation credit value later. So as an example, if a pilot has 3 weeks of vacation, they could lower the first two, and then their final one, they could bring their vacation week all the way up to 40 hours with two paid stretch days for 50 hours of credit if they have that in their bank. And with 50 hours of credit, you may only get awarded 30 hours or so of credit to complete your line. So you could have a really light month by sort of saving that vacation credit for later.
What sort of things do we have in NAVBLUE to help affect the outcome of our vacation?
So you have two things you can do in NAVBLUE. They're both set condition bid preferences. One of them is Vacation Any, and one of them is Slide Vacation. Vacation Any is an interesting tool. It basically allows the system to break up your vacation. So if your intent is to actually take those days as vacation days, I would not recommend using Vacation Any because it can break up your vacation into small pieces. Essentially, what Vacation Any does is it just ignores your vacation, the days themselves. It retains the credit, but it ignores the vacation. It awards your schedule based on your preferences, and then it puts the vacation back wherever it fits. It could be individual days, or it could be chunks. It could be whatever it needs to be. Some people use that if they're really on the bubble between line and reserve, and they're afraid that their vacation is going to block pairings they need to complete their schedule. They'll allow the system to basically award in place of the vacation. Slide vacation is really interesting in NavBlue. You can attempt to slide your vacation anywhere in the entire bid month. There are some limitations to that. The first one is the system won't move your vacation to a place where you would receive a coverage award or unstacking. So you can't slide your vacation to a place to block a holiday pairing or something like that. And it won't move your vacation to a place that causes your schedule to be incomplete. So if you're really junior and there's only so many pairings left, it won't move your vacation to a place that prevents you from getting a line, essentially. But we do see people all the time in holiday months or say Thanksgiving, they'll take the vacation period at the beginning of the month and slide it all the way over to Thanksgiving. If your seniority can hold those days off, you can essentially block the whole week now with your vacation period.
There's got to be mistakes that pilots make during vacation months, right? Can you kind of highlight some of the most common things? I think Dave told me that the number one thing missed is understanding the timelines, right?
As a committee, we highly recommend that you sign up for the text alerts. And that's going to alert you the day prior of the vacation adjustment period opening up to remind you that you need to go into ELP and make those adjustments. Obviously, there's a lot going on in that month, and oftentimes we don't think about a month and a half prior to adjusting our vacation. So those text casters really do help. But as previously noted, we have seen a lot of guys request vacation adjustment days after the actual ELP or vacation adjustment period has closed.
Okay. We talked earlier about using low credit windows, high credit windows. If you do a low credit window, you're going to be able to get more days off, likely build more days off around your actual vacation, correct?
I guess to sort of answer your question, there's kind of extremes you can take your vacation bidding. And within the context of credit windows, if your goal is to fly as little as possible in a vacation month, then what you should be doing is increasing your vacation credit value as high as you can or as high as you can afford based on your vacation bank and adding paid stretch days if you have that credit available. And then you can combine that with bidding the minimum credit window. So if you had a 40-hour vacation week plus 2 paid stretch days, that would be 50 hours of vacation credit. The minimum credit window is always 74 and a half hours. It always starts at 74 and a half hours. So you would only need that 24 hours and change to complete your schedule. That could be just a couple of pairings, depending on what your seniority can hold or what's available in your domicile. So if your goal is to get lots of time off, that's kind of how you would accomplish that in a vacation month. The other extreme, though, is if you want to make money in your vacation month, you can sell back your vacation as one option just to not take it at all and get paid over guarantee for your vacation value. Or you could bid the maximum credit window and maybe lower your vacation credit value to get more flying in that month. So it's really up to the pilot, and there's some strategy involved there. It's sort of on you to monitor your vacation bank and know what you have available and sort of plan throughout the year what your intent is for your future vacation periods if you have more than 1 week available.
Now, say you take your vacation and you've got a 35-hour block of vacation coming. You reduce that down to 15 hours. When do I expect to see that remaining 20 hours of compensation? And how does that differ from selling back your time to the company?
So if you sell back your vacation during the vacation adjustment period, that credit goes on the fifth of the month paycheck following the vacation month. So if you had July vacation and you sell it back, you get that pay August 5th. If you reduce your vacation credit value at some point during the year and you leave excess credit in your vacation bank, that gets paid out on January 5th of the following year. So if you lowered it down to 15 hours, as you said before, you may have about 20 hours excess in your bank. That would just stay in there until January, unless you used it on another vacation period to increase the value or buy stretch days, something like that.
Like what you're hearing? Please take a moment to share the 5x5 podcast on social media or text it to that pilot who has no idea there is a podcast. An informed pilot group is a unified pilot group.
Bidding for training, I found it kind of interesting. Some of the other companies that use NavBlue, they don't utilize it for training. Like I said, surprised me because it's very functional and very simple to use. I like it a lot. Apparently, we have some issues with that, though. There's a lot of mistakes made around it. People forget to do it, but people also do it incorrectly. What are some of the roadblocks that you see with people when it comes to training bids?
So the biggest issue we have with the training bid is people forgetting about it. And I don't mean that they forget that it exists. They forget that they're eligible, or they don't realize that they're eligible to bid. So the first thing is to know when your base months are for training. And you can bid in a 3-month window around your PC and your PT dates. So if you were due month is July, it means you could go in June, July, or August. And NetBlue calls those 3 months early, may go, and must go. And the rules are a little different for each bid month. The first thing to really consider is when you're eligible to bid for training. And there's a document that the company publishes each month in Docunet right before the training bid opens that lists everybody that's eligible to bid and their bid status, early, may go, must go. Within NetBlue itself, one of the biggest things we see is a misunderstanding of the avoid voluntary training bid line. If you go into NetBlue and you go to the bids tab and then the training sub tab, there's a gray line that says avoid voluntary training. And you can't delete it, but you can move it. So it serves a really important purpose depending on whether you're an early, a may go, or a must go. If you're an early training bidder, the avoid voluntary training line will prevent the system from awarding you anything unless you place bids above it. So in your early month, all training is voluntary. So if you want to go, you have to bid for it affirmatively and above the avoid voluntary training line. In your may go month, the company can involuntarily assign you training. It doesn't, but they won't necessarily do that. It's based on seniority. So the system wants to award all of the open training slots, and it'll do that by forcing may-gos to attend training, even if they don't bid. So if you're in your may-go month, we recommend that you place bids above the line if you want those training patterns, and we recommend that you place bids below the avoid voluntary training line as a backup. And what the system will do is it'll first try to award you things that you affirmatively bid for above the avoid line, and then it'll try to not make you go to training. But if you're forced, it'll look at your bid below. And then your must-go month, that avoid voluntary training line serves no purpose at all. No training is voluntary in your must-go month. You are going. So I guess to reiterate, the biggest thing we see is people not bidding or forgetting to bid or not realizing that it happens 2 months early. So again, like at the end of May for July training is when that happens. And the second thing is mistakes with the avoid voluntary training line.
Yeah. And what are you bidding for in a training bid?
So you're bidding for what are called training patterns. And a training pattern is available to multiple domiciles. So if you go into NetBlue and you expand the details of a training pattern, you'll see deadheads based on what domicile you have. And you'll see simulator slots and ground school times. So when you're bidding for training patterns, you're essentially kind of choosing what sim slot or what ground school day or whatever it is that you want. So my personal bidding strategy is always to bid for the early morning sims. I like those. So I'll go in and I'll specifically bid for the 5 a.m. sim slots. Some people do the opposite. They want evening sims or whatever it is that you want. So you're essentially choosing which training schedule you're going to have for that month. And then once the training, go ahead.
Yeah. Is there a way to choose, I want all early morning slots at first and then midday and then evening? Are you allowed to do it that way, or do you have to do it trip by trip?
So you can't, well, okay. So we recommend that you bid for training patterns by pattern number. Generally, we encourage people to bid one pattern on one bid line, so you're ranking them specifically in order. But to answer your question directly, you can bid like all of the early morning sim slots on one bid line if you wanted to. You're just basically saying that you're indifferent to all of them. You rank them all similarly. So if you put all of the 5 a.m. sim slots on one bid line, the system would just try to give you any one of those in no particular order. The way that I personally bid is I bid one pattern at a time. So I would bid just all of the ASIM slots on one bid line based on the day of the month that they fall. That's preferable to me. And then I would bid the less desirable training slots to me below those one by one. And then one more thing that's a little confusing about bidding for training patterns is the difference between the pattern and the training event itself. So there's NetBlue calls it pattern start and an event start. So what's a little confusing is because the training patterns are available to multiple domiciles, you've got to expand the pattern details and really look closely at what day you're going to be departing for your training event. So within NetBlue, it'll refer to the first day of training, whether that's sim or ground school, whatever it is, as day one. And then it'll show your deadhead as typically day minus one. So if the calendar view of the training pattern has, say, the 25th circled, that's the first day of training. If day minus one is your deadhead day, then you would be deadheading on the 24th. So we occasionally see some confusion about that when the awards come out. People think that their pattern should be shifted forward a day, but it's day minus one is typically deadhead.
Okay. And with this too, we have a tool called GDO, right? Can you explain what the heck GDO is?
Yeah. So contractually, you're entitled to golden days. They're applicable only to your may-go month. if you don't have a vacation period. So, and the reason for that is if it's your May-go month and you have vacation, you're exempt from that forced award. You're exempt from that junior assignment. So if you don't want to attend training in a vacation month and it's your May-go month for bidding in NavBlue, you aren't required to attend training essentially. Golden days are used to block up to 3 calendar days in your schedule to prevent training from being awarded on those days. And practically the way that works is you go into Flicka, I believe it's from the 20th to the 22nd of each month, you go into Flicka and you bid for your golden days. The company places those in your NavBlue calendar, but it prevents the system from awarding training on those days. Once the training's been awarded, they pull the golden days back off. So that's one kind of common misconception, is that the golden days will stay on for the regular monthly bid, and they don't. It only prevents training from being awarded there. It doesn't prevent any pairings from being awarded there.
Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the show. Matt Pease, Dave Coons, I want to thank you for joining me on this episode. We talked about a lot of stuff. I know it's a really wide-ranging episode, but it's the first time we've been able to have these two guys on the show, and I wanted to make sure that we gave you a great understanding of the services available to you through the PBS committee and that you utilize them. There's also a ton of training available online. Figure out how to do this, how to maximize your quality of life utilizing PBS. One more reminder here, we start Section 6 negotiations in July, and it is so incredibly important that you take the 10 to 15 minutes to complete the survey sent to your inboxes. We want to make sure that you have the opportunity to participate fully. We're striving for 100% participation from the pilot group. This is the key to get a temperature of the pilot group, of you, to understand where you are, what you want to see as we move into negotiations for our next contract. This is a new format. It's gauging interest in a variety of topics, and it also allows you to share your own desires. The survey is due by May 19th. Please, please get this in. Give your MEC and your negotiating committee an idea of where you want them focusing moving forward. I'll be back in about another month with another great episode of 5x5. Please throw me a dart if you have any suggestions. Subscribe to the show. You're going to get notified immediately when episodes are published, and continue to share these episodes online with your friends. Now, please go take the survey. Goodbye.